Hello, folks, and welcome to another episode of our Go Far Fast show, our small business talk show that's designed to get you, our audience, the answers to the burning questions of today. And boy, have we got a show for you today, haven't we, Aaron? Excited about this one.
Certainly am. So we have the name of the show, which is the Go Far Fast show, and that's exactly what we have for you today. We have the wonderful Louis. Louis is here to tell us all about his podcast, aptly named Everybody Hates Marketers. More on that in a minute, which boasts 1 million plus downloads with no ads in less than 4 years, which is an absolutely amazing achievement. Don't worry, Merle, though, we won't be missing an opportunity to ask the obvious question. Why does everyone hate marketers? And Louis has 10 years experience in the field, including jobs at Dropbox. And he's quoted as saying that he believes that radical differentiation is the antidote to marketing BS. So we're going to have to definitely ask him what that's all about. And we're in for a treat as Louis is honest enough to tell us all about the truth of what it's like to launch products and services that flop, and crucially, how to learn from mistakes and create stuff that stands out and makes him feel good as well. So we should be the best person around to ask that age-old question, what's the point in marketing and what makes a good marketer? Then, my favourite part of the show, we're off to the legendary community questions. So Merle, can you tell us all about how this show works, what happens, and then we can get our guest onto the show.
Absolutely. Well, guys, you know the formula well by now. Aaron and I will ask some of the questions to begin with, and then we'll turn the floor over to you. Thank you very much for sending in your questions for Louis. I'm, like Aaron, really keen to hear about why everyone hates marketers, and having been a big fan for a while now of Louis' amazing newsletters. If you haven't signed up for Louis' kind of 7-day feast of hot tips and insights on marketing, please do. Don't miss it. It's amazing. I love it. I have that kind of yes moment to pretty much every one of Louis' newsletters. And as those of you who know me well, Aaron, I don't do that to most of what lands in my inbox. So one not to miss, and some amazing podcasts with some great insights too. So don't forget, like, comment and subscribe, folks, as we go through. If we haven't got the questions that you really wanted us to ask today, ship those across at us by any of the social media feeds in the usual way, and we'll follow up on them too. Aaron, I think it's time to pull back the curtain.
Certainly is. Louis, welcome to the show. Welcome. We're really grateful to have you here today. We're going to lead straight in a question, if you don't mind. And this question is quite aptly named, really. So we love our viewers to get to know and hear about Everyone Hates Marketers. I'm really intrigued about that name. Come about. Will you share with the story with us? Why does everybody hate marketers in your view?
Bonjour, bonjour. I need to fly my French flag a bit just so that you have no doubt whatsoever that I'm very French. And that's the accent you're going to hear today. So yeah, thanks so much for your time. The story behind Everyone Hates Marketers didn't start 4 years ago when the podcast started. It started when I was, I mean, I'm going to go very cliche, but as soon as a year or two after I was born, because I was always trying to contradict my mother in particular, and that turned into this kind of defense mechanism to get her attention. That turned into me trying to find flaws into people's thinking all the time. In high school, I got called an intellectual terrorist once for that very reason. I'm not very proud of it, but that's just to show you the kind of personality I had. And so I always had this kind of contrarian mindset where I was always trying to find flaws in people's thinking, my teachers, my parents, my friends, everyone. And I managed kind of to channel that energy into something a bit useful, which is marketing. And yeah, straight away, as soon as I entered the industry after reading this French book, that is kind of the translation of the great book by Cialdini, Persuasion, I noticed a few stuff that I wasn't super happy with in the marketing industry, a few stuff that really annoyed me, frankly. And that's when I started to kind of create this mindset around the marketing industry and the marketing mindset. I was kind of wrong, but it took me a while to get the confidence and the knowledge to actually put it out there. And so it wasn't just like this, boom, I have this brilliant idea, let's do it. It took years of shipping stuff, seeing what worked, seeing what people liked, what they didn't like, before having the idea of finally launching a podcast. And So why does everyone hate marketers, huh? Well, I think we all know, and this is why I don't have to really explain it. Intuitively, people understand why we tend to hate marketers. We tend to hate marketers because we like to kind of, you know, make a product that is quite average to be the best in class, or like trying to lie a bit to people, trying to make them believe stuff that are not super true, and plenty of other stuff. You would have your own reason why you would hate us. But actually, I don't blame marketers. That's the main thing. I don't blame you if you're a marketer and if you have to use sleazy tactics, because I know that you are very likely under pressure by your boss, under pressure by the industry, the economy. You might be in a situation where you have to feed your kids, and frankly, I can't blame you for that. And so this is the trick about the title. It's very contrarian, and it's there to make you notice it. But I'm not there to insult marketers. I'm there to help them so that they can reach their goal and feed their families and achieve their goals without being sleazy.
And I think that comes across so beautifully in the newsletters and the podcast as well. In fact, everything that you do, Louis, it's very clear this isn't critical, because there's so much wisdom in what you actually impart. And it's different wisdom. It's very insightful. And I definitely want us to be digging into that a bit more in today's episode. But I want to ask you a particular question right up front, Louis, and that's, what's the point of marketing? Because I think it's very misunderstood. It's a very generic term that's often misused too. And I know you advise businesses around the globe on marketing, why they should do it, how to get it right, who can we learn from? I think that's one of the biggest questions. Who's getting it right? Who can we like learn from and copy in some way? The rather brilliant owl on your website, I think, sort of wonderfully sums it all up. But Louis, why should we be doing it, and how do we get it right?
So whether or not you are intentionally doing it, you're doing it. And marketing is the science of obsessing over a group of people that you understand so well so that you can provide them the solution that they seek. It's about transformation in the right sense of the term. It's about making people reach a goal, helping them reach their goal, whatever it is. And it's a generous act, as Seth Godin would say, right? It's a generous thing. And this is what annoys me when people take this discipline and turn it into something like advertising. Advertising is a smaller part of marketing, but marketing as a whole is really about understanding your audience so well so that you understand their wants and their needs better than they understand themselves. Engineer a solution that is different from the rest, that help them to reach their goal or their objective in a better way, and showing up, frankly, for years and years and years to make sure that you attract more and more people who like that stuff, get feedback, and do it all over again. So marketing starts with your markets. That's where the word is coming from. And I know it sounds very obvious, but that's one of my biggest pet peeves. Marketing is about them, not about you. It's about your market, never about you. Right. And once you understand that, things get easier. It's never about you. Don't get angry if people don't listen to you. It's because there is something wrong with the way you communicate, and it means that they don't care. No one cares about you. And that's the beauty of marketing. It could feel a bit crazy to think, oh, no, no way. No one cares about me. But that's the good thing. If no one cares, it means you can try stuff. You can take some risk. You can have fun. And once I understood that as well, things became to be much, much better on my side as well. So that's one of my biggest pet peeves. That's what marketing is. It's about obsessing over your market.
I love that. And I rather love what you just said there as well about it being about them, not you. How do we take that sort of art of communication further then to make sure that we're doing it right, Louis?
Well, you have a few ways. So the first tool that you can use is your brain and your intuition. A lot of brilliant marketers, I would say Seth Godin, who wrote Purple Cow, amongst other books, he's kind of an intuitive guy. And all of his books talk to you about how to do it, how to use your intuition, and how to use your brain. He never really talks about market research or interviewing customers. So that's the one way. Some people are very good at intuition. To develop your intuition, you need to be, frankly, you need to love your craft. You need to practice every day. You need to be curious. And I'm afraid I can't teach you that. You have to just try your luck, make a guess, ship something, see if it works, get feedback, do it all over again. It's, you know, That's the first tool. Second tool I mentioned is market research. I'm not talking about focus groups or anything like that that could be very biased. I'm talking about trying to talk to customers who recently purchased your products. So that's my first kind of actionable takeaway if you're listening to this right now. You can do it today. Reach out to folks who bought your product or a competitor's product recently in the last 3 months so that they have some recollection of it and ask them about the journey. Ask them about, you know, think about the very first time you ever thought about a product like Ares or buying something like that. What came to mind? What happened? And then you ask them, what other solutions did you look up to? You know, what did you ask anyone? You just ask them those questions to. The way I see it is you paint this painting of the reality of their situation. So you don't have to guess. And once you interview enough people, you will start seeing patterns. And again, our brain is a beautiful tool for that. We are very good at pattern recognition and making up patterns like that. So you will start hearing the same thing over and over again from people who don't know each other. And that's when you know that you're going to have something that is interesting. And you'll get so much more data than looking at your Google Analytics dashboard. Because we are humans, and that's what happens. You get to know who they are. You get to sense how they communicate. You get to understand their body language and their nonverbal cues. You get to understand the words they use and don't use. Everything gets easier once you don't have to guess stuff. So do not interview or try to talk to folks who never bought a product that you're selling. Don't try to talk to tire kickers because they might give you very bad data. So that's another way to do it. Another way is just frankly to ship stuff and see what sticks, see what doesn't. Honestly, even after years of experience, you know, even after interviewing people and using my experience, my intuition, there's a lot of stuff that fails, and that's normal. So you need to have to be humble enough to say, the data I'm getting is not a reflection on my ability. It's just the way, you know, the market works and marketing works. And so it's everything is a grand experiment. So I would say those are the two main tools that you see out there. I mean, the three main. So intuition. Interviewing customers, recent customers, or customers of competitors, and shipping stuff and seeing what sticks.
I love the raw honesty there. I love the fact that we're kind of looking at it in terms of how it really is for businesses. I'm sure Merle's been the same. We've sat there in front of meetings and we've watched these Google Analytics boards and we've been told that this means that and this number means that. And yeah, you know, you definitely can learn a lot from it, but it's what you said there about the fact that actually speaking to a customer, you're going to learn so much more, you know, understanding the human and how that human interaction is going to be. And I really, really appreciate that piece of advice. Thinking of advice, though, and thinking about what you've just been saying there about how complicated, let's be honest, the whole world of marketing is and how, you know, there is going to be that ability to have to understand, have to know your craft, like you said before. And I know you've kind of touched on this, but can we just deep dive a little bit into about, you know, is there a need for a marketing qualification to do it well? And in, like me, so as a small business, we tried to muddle for ourselves. We tried to do our own marketing. We tried to have a go and everything else. And you know, obviously it didn't work out as well as intended. But what advice do you have for people like ourselves who are just muddling through, trying our best? Is there anything we can particularly do better or worse? Or what would you say to that?
That's a very good question, because I know this is something that people ask themselves a lot. So whether you're at the start of your career and you want to find your first job in marketing, or whether you're a small business owner and you want to get better at it, frankly, I think the strategy depends on the context. But overall, what I see happening, which is probably the best strategy, is to start by, you know, putting yourself out there in some way, shape, or form. Starting a project, a blog, a newsletter, a podcast, a YouTube channel, whatever. There's nothing better than the real field, like the reality of it, right? If you have a small business, starting ads yourself, trying to do stuff yourself and seeing what happens and the methods you need to use is frankly the start. It's the best way to start. It might feel a bit messy, but that's how it should be. Like, people are messy. Like, people can't understand why they really bought something. They can explain to you a few things, but you need to use your intuition to add to it. And it's the same way for your marketing. You need to kind of get started. Now, depending on your role, let's say you like Facebook ads, and that's something that you really like doing. By all means, specialize in that, get some course and on that, but try to get courses that are being taught by practitioners, not in colleges necessarily because they are quite out of date, but by folks who know their stuff in that field. But overall, once you can experience what you're going to need above all else, and that's for everyone, whether you're a small business owner, a practitioner, whatnot, is the foundations. You need to understand the foundations, right? By foundations, I mean, so market research, positioning, competitive analysis, strategy. Strategy being what to do and what not to do, more importantly, even more what not to do. That should be your question. What should we not do? Where should we not be? Who should we not target? So once you have like the key foundations that will never change, the key psychology principle that will never change, you have a solid base and you can basically do anything after that. So you can move away from Facebook ads and do PPC and move away from social media altogether and do strategy only, and you can specialize in one industry and whatnot. So that would be overall my advice. Do get started. If you don't have a job, if you're looking for experience, contact small businesses and offer to do their ads for free for 3 months. See if you can actually generate some money for them. Try to do something. Like, this is the beauty of the marketing field. It's that it's practical. You need to ship stuff and see how people react, and that's the beauty of it. So that would be my advice. I'm not saying no for college certifications and diplomas and bachelor degree and master degrees, because some of them do touch on the fundamentals, but overall the quality of the marketing curriculum in traditional universities is not as good as what I've seen from independent bodies like Marketing Week and Mark Ritson with his mini MBA, or even Seth Godin and some of the stuff he does with his MBAs, alt MBAs, because they're more up to date and they are taught by experts who do stuff every day in the real world.
I think that's such a liberating answer as well. It is about getting out there and as you say, feeling it, doing it, watching it, monitoring it, obviously not ignoring it, which is what some of us think we might have done. We tick that box. It's done. We've done the marketing bit now. But that's a great answer. Louis, I want to talk to you about the workshop that you do. So you have this rather wonderful Stand the F Out workshop. I know the next cohort kicks off in September. I have a little bit of an insight, obviously, into what's involved. You mentioned these sort of alternative training solutions, or you know, experiential solutions that we could be thinking about if we want to improve our marketing, if we want to maybe get up to speed with what it really means. Can you tell us a little bit about what the workshop does? What can we expect? Can anyone apply? And if so, how do we apply, Louis?
Well, I appreciate you asking that question. Thank you. It's killing me, frankly, that I can't curse. So I'm going to really, really try to take it easy on this. So the program that I'm not going to name because I'm going to have to curse, but you named it, is something that I designed through years and years of thinking about the craft and thinking about the core question, which is how do you fight marketing BS, right? How do you actually give folks a method, some sort of a curriculum, something they can follow that will be valid today in 10 years and 50 years to actually stand out, become number one in the market, whatever the category. And then once they're big, they can employ some big boys tactics and strategies. But most of the time, what I see from consultants, small business owners, or bigger businesses who want to become number one, wants to grow their market share, is that problem of differentiation. Yeah. How do you stand out? That's the question. So how do you fight marketing BS? By radically stand out, by becoming the only one, the only solution for a specific group of people in a specific category. By category, I mean, if you are selling accounting software, the category will be accounting software. Or if it's even more specialized, if it's accounting software, like sophisticated accounting software for a specific industry, that would be your category. So by becoming the only, you remove direct competitors from the equation and you really focus on the problem and you stop copying everyone else. So that's radical differentiation in a nutshell. And to me, that is the answer to fight marketing BS. Like, honestly, that's what I found to be the true answer. Once you nail that part, everything becomes much easier. You have a solid positioning, solid story to tell, a group of customers you can obsess about for years that you can defend as well. And then you just share that. You make sure that people understand you, notice you, trust you, and things get easier. So it's a cycle like that. So that's what I teach through this 8-week, very high-intensity program. It's high-intensity because it takes time. So it's not for everyone. You need to put minimum 6 to 8 hours a week on this. And the assignments that you are given every week are real work stuff. So we have small business owners, consultants, VPs, very experienced folks, to be honest, already, which is awesome to see. And we go through 4 phases, briefly challenging your mindset, because standing out and challenging the marketing BS is really part of the mindset, removing some self-limiting belief that might prevent you from taking action. 2 is obsessing over your minimum viable market. So all the stuff I told you about, the market research and whatnot. 3 will be engineering your radical differentiation. And it's really about looking at many insights you've collected from different sources and truly either engineer a new product that you have thought about or take something that you're selling and cutting the fluff, adding some stuff, removing some stuff, engineering it so it becomes truly the only in the category. And then finally, what I call the jolt, which is making people notice you, trust you, and buy from you by being generous, by sharing what I call a gift, which is not like a lead magnet or a PDF on the website. It's much bigger than that. Anything can be a gift as long as it's generous. And that's what we go through. So it's very high intensity and it suits my personality very well. And I like it. And yeah, we are in the middle of cohort number 2 right now. We are recording that in mid-March. And the next one is in September.
Perfect. Perfect, Louis. So folks, you heard it here. If you go to Everyone Hates Marketers, you can find more details, including how to sign up. I think it's a phenomenal course and it's covering, I think, some of the answers that we most need to be focusing on and asking ourselves. So thank you, Louis. Aaron, I know you and I have loads of questions that we would love to interrogate Louis on further, but I think it's time to turn to our community questions. Do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, certainly, Merle. Let's get on to those questions from the community. And I think really it's all about what Louis just said there, about the fact that when you think about it, we've all been tried to be sold these marketing courses before. And the course that was just been told there was absolutely brilliant. Thinking about the fact that it wasn't that prescribed formula. It's not about just giving some formula and you're going to go out there and become a great, wonderful marketer. It's about actually understanding your market, understanding what's going on. And I think that's where the community is struggling. And that this question that we've got here kind of emphasizes that. I keep being told I need a brand story or a personal story to help me stand out and persuade people about my business, but I'm totally stuck. Is there any way you can help? Is it essential to have these kinds of stories or not?
I love that question because that boils my blood to a degree you wouldn't believe. So this is mostly BS. The reason why it's BS is because you can't radically stand out. You can't be noticed with just a message or a different story. Because if you have an average product that you sell to everyone, you frankly don't know why you're better. You're just average things for average people, the same features than everyone else. You have no chance to stand out. You can just, you know, put lipstick on a pig if you want to. You can make, craft a beautiful story on top of an average product, but it's not going to work. In today's world where clutter is everywhere, where everyone with a brain and a laptop can start a business or become an agency or become a freelancer or start a business, this is not going to cut it anymore. That's as frankly as I can make it. So to really stand out, the formula is to become the only solution in a specific category for a specific group of people. And once you know that, the story you tell is easy, quote unquote easy. It's not simple. You need it's simple, not easy. It's simple to understand. You need to truly tell them, hey, this is the problem you're facing. I know how you feel. We are here to help you. We are the guide. This is my call to action to you. This is what you should do. And hopefully you'd prevent from failing and succeed. That's honestly any storytelling framework you see online. It's rooted in the same psychology principle. People remember stories. People understand stories better. Why? Because we can't make up, our brain can't make up the difference between a pretend story or a real story, like something that happens through a story or something that happens to us in real life. And that's why storytelling is like this big buzzword. But ultimately, once you have a good product to sell to a good to a group of people you understand in a specific category, the story writes itself. So you have a good book called Building a Story Brand from Donald Miller. Read it. It's a good framework, but frankly, the story itself is never going to cut it.
That's a great answer. It's a great answer. I think a lot of us are afraid of kind of narrowing things down as well, Louis, because we're all taught, you know, think big, think scale, think the fact that you're going to serve millions and millions of people. And I think that's part of the difficulty with a lot of the storytelling, that it sort of gets narrowed down because we don't want to narrow it down. We don't want to be niche or radically stand out if that means we sell to five people versus, you know, 5 million. And there's that, this is the point I think you made earlier about, you know, you can't blame marketers because it's the pressure of everything else around them that suddenly makes the story distorted, right?
So there's a few things here to unpack. One, marketers should have a seat at the table when it comes to business decisions. Radical differentiation is a business strategy disguised as a marketing method, disguised as a positioning method. But ultimately, marketers must have influence on the four traditional P's of marketing: product, price, place, promotion. Product is absolutely something that we must be able to, as marketers, as business owners, to influence. If you're being given a product that you can't do anything about, and by product, I mean the box that you're selling, so it could be a service or whatever, then honestly, it's going to be very difficult to do your job. So that's the first thing. The second thing that you're mentioning is one of the biggest self-limiting beliefs that I see out there, which is the fact that if we go too narrow, we're going to miss out on opportunities. Clients are going to reach out to us and it's not for them, so we're going to miss out on money. Now, let me ask you a simple question. When you have a huge tooth pain, are you going to see your GP or are you going to see your dentist? When you have heart problems, are you going to see your GP so that they operate on you, or are you going to see a heart surgeon? It's the same thing for whatever you offer. You must specialize because people see and understand specialization as expertise. So the question to ask yourself is not what are we missing out by narrowing down, is what are we missing out by if we don't focus on a specific group, if we don't sell a specific solution. You're going to miss out on more money because expertise sells. You're going to miss out on deeply understanding that group of people better than anyone else so you can become the number one. And then once, don't worry about it, once you have nailed that group of people and sold to enough so become number one in that small category for that group of people, by all means, expand. Use the money to expand to another market, to another market, to another market. But if you try to do everything at once, you're going to fail at everything. It's going to be incredibly difficult. And one last thing, you might think, oh, big brands don't sell to everyone. They have average product that all look the same, and yet they are successful. Why not us? Well, they are successful because they are big. They are big, and they are leveraging a force that is called the double jeopardy law, which was coined by Baron Sharp, which is scientific-based research and studies made over many years and industries, that tells you that the higher your market share, the more likely people are going to stick around slightly more, the more they're going to recommend you slightly more. And the lesser the market share, the more people are going to switch around to other brands, the less loyal they're going to be. So the bigger you are, the more you're going to get this kind of a big force pushing you forward. The radical differentiation and everything we've been talking about is relevant for the 99.9% of companies out there who are not number one in their category, who need to grow market share. Once you have this scale, different forces apply, and it's a kind of a different game, but most people are never get to play that game.
All right. Well, we need to listen to what you say then so we get closer to being radically differentiated and grabbing that market share. Time for another community question, Louis, if we may. This one's about marketing plans. So I have no idea how to go about creating a marketing plan. I really relate to this. It was so me. And Google is just sending me down rabbit holes to places where people seem to assume that I know so much more than I do. I just want something simple. What's your advice?
So there's a great book written by Alan Dibb called The One-Page Marketing Plan. So it's one page. I'm a big fan of one pagers. And frankly, if you're not able to summarize anything on one page, you haven't simplified it enough, and people are not going to remember it or read it inside your team or outside. So it's a great book. It follows a very simple funnel. It's in three parts. The top part is about your audience, who they are, their psychographics, so why they buy and all of that, and where they hang out, the channels. And then the last two parts are basically the six steps of a traditional funnel, from attracting to nurturing them to converting them to closing. And after that, and frankly, I've used that strategy, that plan and that framework in many scenarios, in big companies, small companies, for my own. And every time you can summarize things. Even if you're a big company, if you're not able to summarize things this way, then it means you don't really understand what you're doing, and it means you're focusing on too many things at once.
Yeah, I think that's right as well. I think we went down that exact same rabbit hole of we went out, we got external help, and we got this massive PowerPoint presentation of 60 slides of how we can improve our product and market to X, Y, and Z. But you're right, if we can't put that down onto one piece of paper and be able to understand it ourselves, how's our team, how's the wider audience going to understand what it is we're trying to sell? So I think that's really important advice, and that's definitely something that we learned and we would definitely recommend as well. When it comes down to, though, kind of giving more people some more kind of help, and if you don't mind, we've got more community questions here, and we've got the fact that, given the current circumstances, given that everything's going on, we've got a community member here saying that they're really struggling to work out who to sell to. I had some early success with some customers who seem to like my product, but COVID's changed how they buy stuff, and now they've not so interested. I've never done personas, but I think hearing how they can help, where can I go and learn, and how to do a personal, and what it is really. Can you give some insight into what they should be doing? You know, I assume, well, we know from our community that a lot of people are going through this at the moment. So any advice would be really useful for them.
So first, I feel for you. I know it's not easy to have to change things around because of a pandemic and all of that. So yeah, it's not easy, and you're doing a very tough job, and I appreciate you for it. That's the one thing I would say first. But the important thing about understanding your market is that you need to understand why they buy from you, where they hang out, how did they take this decision, what other alternatives did they look into before looking for you, why did they buy from you and not someone else's. Those are a set of questions that you can ask yourself intuitively, that you can ask recent customers, that you can ask customers who bought direct competitors. And frankly, once you have that, you need to really do the job of layering it down and asking yourself, is there any, and that's an important question, are there any differences in the market that could put you in an advantage? Meaning, is there any group of people that is part of a bigger group that you thought of targeting that actually could put you in an advantage because you could become the best and the only solution for them? And those are hard questions to ask because you're going to have to trim things down. But frankly, that's how it starts. So again, market research, just asking those questions, sending surveys with the similar questions, using your intuition, looking at what direct competitors and alternative are doing. I have a few episodes on that topic on the Everyone Hates Marketers podcast. If you just search like persona, Everyone Hates Marketers, you'll find a lot. And you discover that buyer's personas are usually BS. I'm doing very well. I haven't cursed. I'm so proud. It's mostly BS because they focus on demographics, firmographics, geographics, meaning everything but the reason why people buy from you. Now, granted, if you're selling an accounting software for a specific industry already, you know that the industry is kind of where it's at. But it doesn't tell you why people buy. It doesn't tell you where they are, when they are experiencing the triggers to buy, when, with whom, and all of those questions. And so once you understand that, things become much easier, and then you can feel the plan. But this isn't a, you know, 100% perfect way. You're going to have to try things and see what sticks. But usually the issues of I don't really know who to target and feels like I'm not really good for anyone stems from the fear of narrowing things down. Once you narrow things down and understand that I can dominate that small market and then move on, things become much easier.
I think that's such a powerful answer, Louis. Thank you. I think we've got time for one more community question, Aaron, and then we're probably going to need to wrap up. Guys, you've sent us so many questions for Louis. We'll try and scoop up some of the other ones afterwards. Louis, this is the last one, I promise. I have an idea for a business, but it's not that new. I'm assuming it's the idea that's not that new. Just I think I can do it better than it's been done already. Is that enough of a USP, so a unique selling proposition? What sort of marketing should I do to ensure I stand out like your site says I should, where there's already a bit of competition?
So that's a good sign. Differentiation is not trying to create a new category. Like, there's so much buzz around this, like, frankly, very, very rare occurrence where a company has enough of a innovative solution that they can claim that a new word describes what they do that no one else has. Frankly, most of the time, it never really works because changing people's mind and changing behavior and upgrading their mind and making them learn a new word is just incredibly difficult. So the fact that you have direct competitors already is a good sign. It means you have a category that already exists with direct competitors who are making money out of that category, which is perfect. The game then is to play inside that category. This is probably what I love to do the most. It's about identifying everything that this category tends to do. So I'm just going to give you an example that is not a business per se. It's like the marketing podcast category, and just show you how it works. What I've done with Everyone Has Marketers is that I listed down everything that is currently expected of a marketing podcast, everything that is being done. And I'm talking about behavior, not features, which is a very, very important thing. I'm not talking about just the feature they offer. I'm talking about the behavior, which is bigger than this. So, for example, for marketing podcasts, the host would ask a lot of questions about the guest at the start, and basically you are being offered a subject, but you have to wait 30 minutes to get it. There's a lot of ads in between. They always ask you to leave reviews. They don't allow you to curse. I'm only joking on this one. So plenty of stuff.
Sorry,
like
Louis.
No, I'm joking. Everyone does their own thing and everyone has their own kind of differentiation. But by listing down what your category traditionally does, from the feature they offer, the behavior, the experience, from all of those angles, you're going to start seeing opportunities. And the key question to ask yourself is, what can you remove? What can you stop doing that they're currently doing to make sure that you achieve congruence between the specific group of people you've identified and the solution you offer? And by congruence is a funny word. It's a feeling. It comes with taste and experience. And it's not that easy to describe and to say, hey, you have it, you don't. But it's really this feeling that you can't remove anything else and that it's the perfect solution for this specific problem for them. And by removing as much as possible, you're going to shed light on the positives. That's what happens. When you remove stuff, people are not going to notice as much as they're going to notice what you do. And they will assume that you do it better. So this is a good sign. Play inside that category. Try to look at alternatives and other companies that you admire that are absolutely not in that category and try to see their behavior as well. What do they tend to do differently that you could also mimic that becomes, frankly, part of your DNA? But again, you're going to have to challenge some stuff, some norms, and have fun with it. Ship it to this group of people, see if they like it, improve it. But this is why, to go back to the very small example of the marketing podcast category, this is why I can claim that Everyone Hates Marketers is the only marketing podcast out there for people sick of marketing BS. I can claim that, and that's my spot, and no one can claim it. Or they can claim it if they want to, but I was first, and that's what matters then. So then I can grow into doing other stuff. I can grow into doing a program. I can grow into helping businesses to radically stand out. But that was only available. I'm only able to do that now because I started small within a category, challenged a few norms, took some risk, had fun in the process, and then it took 4 years as well.
Cool. So the question coming through is, I had no idea that marketing was so much about money and data. It's a bit beyond me. I'm selling okay, but I need to expand my customers. So I think I need to do some marketing, but I don't have a head for figures. And I find that data to work out what's worth is really confusing. I'm not sure how I can do something that won't be a waste of time or money. Can you give me some simple suggestions?
I love that. So it's not just about data, science, and numbers, because humans are very interesting creatures. We come from 4 billion years of evolution to where we are today. Our brain has been crafted to really sustain a lot of stuff. And we don't understand ourselves that well, and science hasn't gone that far when it comes to understanding why people take decisions and stuff. So creativity, which is a big C word, is very important. And by creativity, I mostly mean connectivity. So it's about just what would Brian Schwartz say, the famous copywriter, say that creativity is really about connectivity, connecting two things together that shouldn't really be put together. You just connect stuff that you learn from a book and then from experience and put them together and just ship that, in a sense. So my best advice, because I can sense that if you're not into numbers and data, you are more of a someone who likes to create stuff and doesn't really like to think about this stuff, then that's all good. It means that you need to double down on your unique abilities and your strengths. You need to double down on your what gives you energy, what you feel you're very good at, and then outsource the rest. So if you know that your customers hang out a lot on Facebook, but you don't really want to do Facebook ads yourself, or at least monitor the result, then hire someone who can do that for you, and then double down on what makes you good. If you have a good sense and taste for what makes people tick, or creativity, or crazy ideas, then double down on that and see if that sticks. There's no formula. Like, the world is so complex. There's so many different contexts at play, like whether the time of the day, the weather, the mood they are in, the channel you're going to use, the message. There's so many variables that there's no bulletproof way. But the best way is just to ship what you have in mind, follow your gut, go for it, see what works, and then do it again. And outsourcing what you're not so good at, or hire. But no, marketing is not all about data and science. If that was the case, every company would absolutely nail it and grow their market share. And yet, creativity and creative brands and differentiated brands are proven through many studies to actually generate more revenue. People are willing to pay a premium for them. And so creativity and standing out in some way, shape or form is absolutely critical.
Brilliant answer. It really is. It really is. And actually very liberating. I don't have a head for figures. I find the figure work and the statistics critically important, and I obsess about understanding them. But I also find them really draining of creativity as well. I really like that answer. Okay, so the next question, Louis, is this one. If you're starting out, should you work with a marketing agency, and how much should it cost? I've got a bit of investment and my investors are telling me I have to get some marketing support, but I'm being quoted mad amounts of money and I've got no idea whether I'm being spun a line. Also, I don't think the agencies I'm talking to are really listening to me. My goodness, I relate to this one.
Yeah. Okay. So follow your gut. It sounds from the question that you don't feel it. So don't go for any agency you talk to. You are already doing marketing, whether you like it or not. So it's not, your investors are not telling you to invest in marketing. They probably tell you to invest in advertising. That's probably what they are telling you. The marketing bit that you must do as a founder, they're probably a founder or business owner, is to absolutely obsess over your customers yourself. That's your unique kind of advantage, and that's frankly your number one job. So do what I've said a few minutes ago. Check out a few episodes on my podcast where we talk about that in depth, the kind of question to ask. But do talk to your customers, obsess over who they are, why they bought from you, what do they like the most about you, double down on that. Excellence in any extremes always implies a trade-off. So meaning you must focus on a few things and do it super well. And then you can scale, but focus on those customers. And once you have a very deep understanding of your customers, where they hang out, where they don't hang out, what they say, the words they use and all of that, put that on a one-page strategy document, as we described before. Once you have that, then only then decide, okay, what is a channel we need to test out? Should we do SEO? Should we do some paid ads on Google? Because a lot of people search for services like ours. Are they all on Facebook and Instagram? Instead, do they hang out in communities only and they're quite fearful of Facebook? I don't know. That's the beauty of it. But once you have those answers, then you will be able to really know, okay, we're going to laser focus on that channel. We're going to double down on it, see if that works, then move on to another one. But marketing agencies are going to claim that they understand your market better than you do, and they're going to make you do stuff that frankly might not be the best choice for you. So you need to do your due diligence yourself, and that can't be outsourced.
Amazing. Yeah. And you know, if we ever get a time machine, is there any chance you could go back to the beginning of Bofix and just relay all this to my CEO for me?
Well, Frilio too. Yeah. Goodness, I wish I'd known about you then.
Okay, nice, simple one, this one. What's the difference between marketing and PR, and which one is most valuable?
So PR is part of marketing, but marketing is a huge field. Marketing is not advertising. Marketing is about understanding people, knowing where they hang out, engineering a product that fits them, Making sure you're being noticed, trusted, making sure that the experience is good from start to finish, even after they bought. Marketing is a massive field. So PR is a tiny little thing in that. So I can't really, I mean, the question doesn't then make a lot of sense when you put it in this perspective. So it depends. PR is a very profitable channel for some companies. For some, it doesn't matter whatsoever. You have roughly 19 channels to try. That's from a book called Traction. It's mostly written for startup, but it's quite interesting just for the fact that it gives you a list of channels that you can't really come up with more. So I would challenge you to read it. My only caveat with this book is that it's still quite generic. So they would say content marketing is a channel. Well, okay. But then inside content marketing, you can do a YouTube show, a podcast, a newsletter, a blog. So you will still need to dig one layer deeper, I would say. But again, those answers will come from you understanding how they've heard from you. If all of your recent customers that are very profitable for you, that you love to work with, all say they found out about you from a newspaper article, then you know what to do. But if it doesn't seem to be the case, then maybe there's another channel for you.
Oh, that's such a good answer. That crops up an awful lot. Okay, last question in the community questions. And then if we've got chance, Louis, let's come on to personas. But the question is, what really makes a business stand out, Louis? Do you have to spend loads before you can stand out?
You don't have to spend loads, but you have to take risks. Or at least you need to feel like you're taking risks, even though the only risky thing out there when there is so much clutter is to not take any. The risky thing is to just lay in obscurity and do what everyone else is doing and follow what every other direct competitors are doing. That's the actual risk. So you need to feel butterfly in your stomach when you ship that marketing campaign. You need to take risk. What makes a business stand out is the intersection of being the only solution for a specific market in a specific category that does that specific thing. So meaning that offers that specific value. And I hate the word value, so let me just describe it. Meaning you help them reach a goal better, solve a pain, and that's basically what it is. So that's when standing out really happens. And it needs to be congruent, meaning you can't leave everything just like out there because it's there. You need to be careful that every part of your experience is carefully crafted. So that it feels like it's congruent. And so, quick example: Daft Punk, the biggest electronic band in the world. They are French, obviously, who retired recently. They are an example of congruence when it comes to their own behavior, their personality, what they believe, their unique ability. They've released only 4 albums. They wear helmets from almost the very start. They were wearing masks and beanbags before, but they knew that they were fighting against the monster that was the star system. They don't want to fall into that trap of being told to create that music for this specific label. So they did so many things from the very first time. They were so young, they did them so well, and they were able to become the biggest electronic band in the world by just removing everything almost and just focusing on tiny little thing. They use 3 microphones for example, when they did their last album. They recorded the voice of a famous guitarist and producer, and they had 3 microphones on top of him. One that was today's microphone technology, one that was 30 years ago from 30 years ago, and one that was from 60 years ago. And they did that so that when they were recording part of his story from 60 years ago, they would use that microphone. The kicker, though, is that no one notices. Like, honestly, you can't notice, but they do. And this is the kind of the small stuff that means, like, you need to craft this experience like they are. You need to double down on what works. Follow that energy that guides you while you're doing that. And you don't need a lot of money for it whatsoever, but you do need to take some risk, or at least feel like you're taking some.
I think the other thing you mentioned in all of that, Louis, and that's a wonderful story, fantastic band too, one of my favorite bands of all time. I think it was the fact that they did things with purpose and meaning. It meant an awful lot to them to have those 3 microphones, to have thought through that detail. There was real passion in that, and there was real purpose. And I think from a lot of, a lot of people do things that are quite meaningless to them. I think going back to one of the questions about, you know, should I use a marketing agency or not? The minute you start outsourcing the stuff that's actually quite often right at the heart of who you are and what you do and why it matters and why your customers should care, then that remoteness starts to become almost alien, almost imposed, definitely artificial. And I just love the fact that that level of detail, that level of thought and what it meant to them drove what they did, even though as consumers, we probably thought, this sounds great, I really like it. But we hadn't appreciated those subtleties.
And that's what it takes, right? That's what it takes. And that's what I mean by behavior. It's what you're doing and what you're not doing. When they launched their first show, they designed that pyramid, that famous pyramid in their live shows, in secrecy. So there are only two French dudes, part of it. And they did it themselves. They hired suppliers, but they weren't making sure that they were sworn to secrecies. And even their producer didn't know. And so the first time everyone saw it was live in front of 50,000 people. They also were the first ones to pioneer LED in the background. They had like millions of LEDs in the background. That was one of the first times it was done at that scale. They had to basically get suppliers from many different like LED suppliers to supply them because it wasn't a big deal then. But they were able to do that by focusing on like very few things, but doing them better than anyone else. And now brands were asking themselves for years, how do we sound like them? But you can't, because they paid someone to create an entire sort of I'm going to call it the wrong word. I don't really know what it was, like the sort of massive mix console, like to mix stuff that were done for them on demand, that was unique to them. So they by focusing on so many, on a few things, they were able to really, frankly, become the best in the world and the only doing that. And that's the same thing for everyone when we do marketing, even as a small business owner. If you put that much attention in the small things that add up to this congruence, then you have a big shot, because direct competitors, your competitors are not going to do this, 99% sure, because they are too scared. They have self-limiting belief. They follow each other. They are like a flock of birds that just every time someone moves left, they move left. So this is your chance. And no, you don't need a lot of money to do that.
Brilliant. Oh, I really love that answer. Thank you. Louis, have you got time for one more?
Sure, let's go.
Okay. So I'll shorten the question because it's going into the Dear Ferrilio expert section. Louis, why is everyone obsessed with personas and do they ever work?
Because HubSpot tells you need to create personas. So
it does.
This is when marketing 101, when you start reading online and when you stumble upon HubSpot blog post, and even they have a tool to create a persona and whatnot, it's easy to look at the surface level advice being written by people who frankly never had any stakes in businesses, who they never felt like they didn't need to generate revenue next month or else they go bankrupt. Once you put that into perspective, you stop thinking of personas as an exercise that you do in a boardroom where you just decide, oh, this is Katie. She's between 20 and 35 and she works in HR and she has two dogs. That has nothing to do why she bought that car, but you know, you write it down because that's what you're being told. So the real way to see personas is to think about buyer personas and to think about them as to be semi-fictional characters that you build from customer interviews. And demographics, firmographics, geographics are the stuff you put on, like the sprinkle that you put on top of the cupcake. But the cupcake itself is why they bought from you. You want to understand their motivation, the objections that they had, the alternative solutions they looked into before. You want to understand their journey. Once you understand that journey, you can say, okay, those people really, really want to do that thing or solve that pain. Who do they tend to be? Do they have a role in common? Is there an industry in common? Do they tend to be older or younger? Quick example, Adele Revella, who's the CEO of the Buyer Persona Institute, whom I interviewed on the podcast a few years ago, gave this very cool story. She said, we were doing that job for an accounting software, tax software in the US. They were trying to find out, is there a group of people in there that we can obsess about so we have an advantage over the competition? So they did the interviews. They found out that they were using two type of personas, the small business owner and then the accounting person, tax person in bigger companies. And that's how they were classifying them. So they were like, we're going to do small business campaigns and then bigger business campaigns. Obviously, it didn't really work, or else they wouldn't have hired their services. And they found out that there was one key difference. There was one psychographic that made that group of people care way more about that solution than anyone else. It was the fact that the folks who really loved that services, the reason why they love it so much is because they were scared of going to jail if they didn't file their taxes on time. Only that insight, and you can react straight away. You can think about campaigns, you can do anything. They knew that the people who cared the most about them were people who were afraid of going to jail if they didn't file their tax themselves, because they didn't have an accounting team with them, because they had to do that themselves. And boom, you have it. This is an example of a group of people you can obsess over that have an actual reason to buy, strong motivations, a pain, a bleeding neck problem, like something that must be done now. And now you can think about anything. Like, imagine all the campaigns you can do and the fun you can have with just this small insight.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much, Louis.
You're so welcome.
Louis, thank you so much. I mean, this has been brilliant. We've learned so much. And I think one of the things that I love mostly about kind of the way that you're telling people and explaining to people, and that whole, you know, you're saying from day one, it's about getting rid of the BS, making sure the BS. Well, you're doing that anyway by actually not just giving us a great point and a great learning point, but actually giving us a good story to go with it that explains exactly what it is that you're trying to say. And I think that's really important. I think that's what we're going to definitely take away from this, is not only everything that you've been telling us and all those wonderful little niblets that's going to help us in our business and make us understand why everyone hates marketers, which is the whole point of this, but also we're going to have so many stories that we can relay and we can kind of use to go forward and help other businesses as well. So thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
Thank you. And thank you, Louis, for making Aaron invent the term niblets. I love it. Now I want chicken nuggets. That's all for today's episode, folks. Louis, massive, massive thank you for all of that advice and wisdom. Guys, check out the blog site and the Dear Forelio Expert site as well. You'll find the show and Louis's questions and answers there for your knowledge and illumination very shortly. In the meantime, again, don't forget to like, comment and subscribe. We are listening. If there are other topics you want us to cover with brilliant guests like Louis, let us know. We're on it already. And so it's just left for me to say, everybody, thanks again, Louis. Aaron, always a pleasure. Have a great week, folks. Go far fast.